Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I don't know about you guys, but I've actually enjoyed this series of talks, putting it together, that I've done this month. I like the idea of spirituality being something practical, something that just blends in with our normal everyday life. In a way, if you think about it, spirituality is a lot like exercise. If it doesn't fit into your life easily, and if it isn't something that you enjoy, then you probably aren't going to do it. You probably aren't going to stick with it very long. But once you start to see the benefits of it, you know, you start to feel a little better, and you then allow it to become part of your normal process of living, then the process becomes a lot more enjoyable. And even though our life won't become easy all the time, just like if we exercise regularly, it doesn't mean we're not going to get tired sometimes, because our life is not supposed to get easy all the time. I'll cover that a little more in a few minutes. We find that we are able to deal with life in a healthier, more positive, and more balanced way. We start to shape our life like a sculptor shapes a block of clay, using all the tools and all the materials and all of the wisdom and things that we've been given, along with the spiritual awareness that we all share, to learn the lessons that we are here to learn. Now, I know some of you weren't here for all the talks. Some of you were here, so just bear with me if you were. I'm going to do a real quick recap, all right? Let's look briefly at what we've covered this month. Week one, we talked about recognizing and using our strengths, our talents, our passion, our energy, all those things, and recognizing that this power that flows through us is not something we have, it's something we are. That was week one. And then on week two, I talked about how simple it should be to use this power by giving less attention to the little things that seem to pull our attention away from our divine center. In other words, it's important for us to recognize that connecting the spiritual with the physical can be as easy or as hard as we decide to make it. And then last week, I talked about the cycles of life, the ups, the downs, and the in-betweens. I talked about how important it is to not let all the ups and downs that happen around us dictate what's going on inside of us. Because what is in here, the wisdom, the love, the intelligence, the desire, the faith, all these things, what's in here is always more powerful than what's out there, however good or bad or dangerous or difficult what's out there appears to be. There's an old statement from the old time, Old Testament religious books. It says, the creator always has dominion over its creator. I love that word, dominion. All right. The important thing for us to know about that is that we are always the creator. Okay. We are the creative process at work. That's what our life is. Now today, as John mentioned, the title of my talk is The Loyal Opposition. And I'm going to talk about what for most people is the most frustrating part of life, the part that makes some people give up on spirituality altogether because they're mad at God, which is what it boils down to. I'm going to talk about how we face adversity, about what goes through our mind, and about how most of us respond when we're faced with problems and challenges and personal disasters. I'm going to address the question, why does a kind and loving God do all these terrible things to perfectly nice people, especially me? All right, that's the question that we're at. That is a big question for a lot of people. And the answer, of course, as we teach here, is because God doesn't have any choice. God doesn't have any choice. And that may sound strange from a traditional perspective, that God is powerless to make a decision about what happens in our life. But it's true. And it's actually something that's very important for us to understand, because in that answer lies the key to our own spiritual strength, the key to our ability to overcome the challenges we face so we can start to create the kind of life we want to live. You see, that question, that old question of why evil and suffering and pain and sadness exist in the world, is probably one of the oldest, if not the oldest question ever asked by the human race. It's been a question asked by every generation since human beings started walking on the planet. But the old answer, the religious answer that many of us were raised with, that we are being punished or tested by God, that old statement, life is hard and then you die, doesn't work for some of us anymore. Okay? It doesn't work. I mean, for one thing, it doesn't make sense. Why would a supreme being have to test us? You would think it would know what we could do. All right, since we created it. And what kind of, isn't that absurd? And what kind of a loving creator would punish its creation so severely for what, in the big scheme of things, are some very minor infractions? I have a special bulletin board by my desk where I only put special cartoons. Maybe one every 2 years gets to go on it, and I've had it for a long time. And there's one from, where else, The New Yorker. And it's about this, you know, loving grandfatherly guy standing behind a podium, and it's God. And there's this little mousy guy with clouds up to here. He's obviously naked standing before him. And God is saying, this is the caption, God says, no, that's not a sin either. My goodness, you must have worried yourself to death. You know? Don't you love that? The answer, okay, as Dr. Holmes states in The Science of Mind, is very simple. I refer you to week 2. He says, in our ignorance of the truth, we have misused the highest power we possess. And so we suffer, he says, not because suffering is imposed upon us, but because we are ignorant of our true nature. We suffer not because suffering is imposed upon us from on high, but because we are ignorant of our true nature. I would like to add to that that we are also not entirely clear about the true nature of God either. Because if we were, we would look at the world and all its apparent problems in a very different way. You see, this power that we call God or spirit or whatever we happen to call it is definitely a loving power. But we have to understand what the word loving really means. When I say God, this power is loving, I mean it supports us completely. Support is a big component of love. It offers us every opportunity to create anything we want in life, and it provides us, all you got to do is look around, with all the people and the ideas and all the materials and all the opportunities that we need to do anything that we decide to do and believe we can do. Got to be both. We decide to do and believe we can do. All right? That's what loving means. But this power is also something else. This power is also the law of mind at work. So that means it is bound by the law of cause and effect. God itself, spirit, is bound by its own nature to create logical and intelligent results out of whatever thought, word, or belief we put into it. Get it? Okay, everybody clear on that? Good. So in the strictest sense of the word, God does create our problems, but it does so at our direction. It does so at our direction. And what's really frustrating about it is, for many of us, this perfect power does not feel bad about doing this at all. It never says, poor Paul, I know he's not going to like this, but I got to do it anyway because that's what he asked for, all right? And I'm going to tell you why. You see, as far as God is concerned, the infinite creative mind, there aren't any difficulties in the world or in our life because there isn't anything in life that we don't already have the ability to overcome. The gift has been given. We have been given everything we need, all right? In fact, not only can we overcome any obstacle, we can actually grow and prosper in the face of it. Did you know that? We actually can. We can actually become happier, healthier, wealthier, and more successful no matter how bad things seem. That is how powerful we are. Albert Einstein, smart guy, said it this way. It's kind of 4 or 5 sentences, but bear with me. I love the ending. He says, in the middle of every difficulty lies opportunity. Whenever challenged by life's difficulties, it would be advantageous to realize adversity is unavoidable, and then determine how these seemingly ill-fated events will be used to strengthen us. And then he says, keep in mind that wherever you are, whatever your circumstances may be, whatever misfortune you may have suffered, the music of your life has not gone. Isn't that beautiful? The music of your life has not gone. Now, those are beautiful words, and it's a beautiful idea. But sometimes, when we are screaming and crying in anger or pain, when life is crashing down on us, or that's what it feels like, when the ground feels like it's crumbling beneath our feet, the music of our life gets a little hard to hear. A little hard to hear, all right? Now, before I go any further with this, I'm going to tell you this in advance. This is not going to be one of those talks where you should keep your chin up and your nose to the grindstone and shoulder to the wheel. That make you look kind of weird if you're trying to do all that. And it is not a talk where I'm going to tell you that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, because I don't think that's necessarily true. Not everyone gets stronger through suffering. Some people just get used to it, okay? Some people become very, very good at it, all right? Besides, that kind of advice always sounded to me like we are supposed to appreciate suffering. Believe me, I got enough Catholicism in me in my first 18 years. I heard that a lot, okay? Because suffering teaches us the value of pain, which I do not believe is the case at all. You see, suffering does not teach us anything, but pain should. Pain, in and of itself, is not good or bad. Any pain in our life is never a punishment, not from God or from anywhere else. Pain is simply a message. It's a message that what we need to be doing is thinking something differently. In other words, when we feel pain, or doing something differently, when we feel pain, it means that something needs to change, and suffering comes when we don't change. That's the connection between the two, all right? That's where that old saying comes from. Many of you have heard it early on. Pain is mandatory, but suffering is optional. That's what it means. Now, I'm also not going to give you a list of people who have faced insurmountable odds and become billionaires, great actors, or famous political figures, even though it's actually a very, very long list. The only thing we need to know about those people is what they did, we can do. Because we all have equal access to the same spiritual wisdom and inner strength, which is all we ever need. Facing challenges, especially great challenges, has all the advantage of allowing us to discover who we are. John mentioned it in his opening there. When I chose the title, The Loyal Opposition, you know where it comes from? It comes from British politics. Some of you might be familiar with that. The British maintain that in politics, there should always be at least two sides with different viewpoints who challenge each other in order to reach the best solution. Now, as I thought about this, this is not to be confused with the current American model of ignorant and irrational opposition to everything, where the two sides never agree on anything but a pay raise. Okay, that's not what we're talking about here. If, in life, we were just able to decide something and move straight forward and do whatever we thought was best without running into any issues or without any opposition, we would be in constant danger of becoming complacent, or what's even worse, of becoming arrogant. And that's the time when we walk off the edge of the cliff because we're patting ourselves on the back and congratulating ourselves on how smart we are. There is always someone or something in our life ready to confront us. If there is something ready to confront us, it causes us, as John did in the reading, to re-examine our ideas and to consider other possibilities, to stretch our mind where we might not otherwise go. That's why Helen Keller, marvelous woman, wrote this. She said, "I thank God for my handicaps, deaf and blind. I thank God for my handicaps, for through them I have found myself, my work, and my God." Wonderful quote. And Thomas Carlyle, the great British writer, he said, "The block of granite which was an obstacle in the path of the weak becomes a stepping stone in the path of the strong." He's talking about spiritual strength, not physical strength. And what he means is, more often than not, whether we realize it or not, at the time, that which challenges us the most is our greatest helper. Our greatest helper. Now, challenges exist at many levels. Some of them are just annoying. They're fires that need to put out, as John said. Some of them can be life-altering. a disease, a divorce, bankruptcy, all those kind of things. But how severe those challenges are for us personally depends upon how we look at them, on how serious we perceive the potential consequences to be. And it's important for us to know this because that is the point of power when we look at it and decide. That is the point of power. The moment we decide how to look at what is happening and choose to see it either one way or another. That's what Dr. Raymond Charles Barker calls in the title of his book, The Power of Decision, in that moment. For example, a traffic jam is one level of problem we're all familiar with, while a traffic accident is another level of problem, different things. For most people, a broken bone presents one problem, a tumor presents another. It's the same with financial challenges of an unexpected car expense as opposed to losing our job or having our portfolio wiped out, or maybe trying to sell a house or trying to change jobs or find a job while all we keep hearing is how bad the economy is. We run into this stuff all the time. If we have not learned to ground ourselves spiritually, then our level of fear and resentment tends to rise and fall with the level of the problem. But as I talked about last week, all that does is take us out of the solution and put us at the mercy of the problem. Okay. Now, not only can challenges take different forms, our response to the challenges we face can also take different forms. We can throw our hands up in the air and say, oh, well, what can you do? That's just the way things are. Anybody ever done that? I certainly have. Or we can wake up every morning angry at the world with that seething feeling, worried sick about what we're going to do next. Now, neither one of these answers is very appealing. And metaphysically speaking, spiritually speaking, neither one is very productive either. I mean, in the first case, we're just giving up, we're forgetting the spiritual truth, and we're giving in to external experiences. I mean, if you think of the obstacles that we face as a wall, think of any obstacle as a wall, which is actually a pretty good metaphor. When we give up, we just sit down in front of the wall and wish that the wall wasn't there, or wish that things were different, or wish that there was a door. And in the other case, we beat our hands and our head against the wall until we hurt ourselves. Now, one of those approaches is passive, and the other one's active, but neither one is very helpful. However, there's a third option, a much better option, but interestingly enough, it doesn't have anything to do with the wall. Nothing at all. It has more to do with us. It has to do with our ability to choose how we see what's happening in the present moment and what we do next, how we respond in the next moment. We don't want to dwell on what's happening in the past, what got us to this point last week, last month, last year, or what we shouldn't have done yesterday, and not worry about what's going to happen if things don't change, what if I don't get through this. For this approach, this third approach, we simply need to ask, what is the situation right here and right now? What is the situation right here and right now? And then we need to step back. There's a stairs here. Metaphorically, we need to detach ourselves, calm our fears and our anger and our frustration, and then to ask ourselves, and when I say ourself, I mean self with a capital S, that's our higher self, what else is happening here that I don't see? Big question. What else is happening? Now that I've seen what's happening, what else is happening that I don't see? I'm a big fan, to relax my brain, of Sudoku puzzles. You know those? They're sort of 9 by 9 by 9 by 9, kind of, and you got to arrange the numbers in a certain way, and you do it. It totally occupies me. But what I find metaphysically interesting about those is, if I'm looking at one, and I've been looking at it for an hour, and I can't find an answer, I still know there is one. I just can't see it. So that's the question I ask myself there. What is here that I am not seeing? When we do this, what we are doing is being present without resisting what is, without fighting the condition, without fighting the wall. Why does this help? because, as every spiritual teacher has told us in every spiritual discipline in one way or another, anything we fight becomes what? Stronger. Anything we fight becomes stronger. The more we fight, the stronger it gets until we become exhausted. In fact, any problem that we face contains within itself not only a solution, but an opportunity so powerful that it completely overshadows the problem itself. And when we use the spiritual capacity that we all have to choose to be completely present and aware and without fear of the consequences, we allow that greater possibility to reveal itself. We allow it to reveal itself right there because it was there all the time. And we can then decide, where do I want to go from here? What do I want to create out of this experience? Those people in life, in the world, who see opposition as a perfectly normal and manageable part of life, who meet it enthusiastically, without hostility, these people are in tune with the intelligence that we call God. That's all. We can all do it, but they have actually done it. They are people just like you and me, who have come to realize that they have open and immediate access to all the courage, all the ideas, and all the possibilities they need to overcome anything that they encounter and to handle it with ease and understanding. On the other hand, those people who see life's challenges as arbitrary and unfair and who meet those challenges with anger and hostility and resentment are eventually broken by that challenge or they give up because those emotions, which are all based on fear, blind us to the possibilities that are always there. You see, any obstacle that appears to be holding us back or blocking us is not really an obstacle at all. I mean, it may look like a physical thing in front of us, a job situation, whatever it is. Instead, it is nothing more than a mental and spiritual block. It is a spiritual blind spot in the mind of the person perceiving it. And we overcome that block not by opposing it or by breaking through it, or digging under it, or jumping over it. We clear that block by understanding it, by understanding what it is. And we understand it best by understanding ourselves, by understanding that we are co-creators with the one mind of not only our experience, not only the thing we're dealing with, but of that which can change our experience. Dr. Holmes has a great phrase in the book. I didn't understand it the first time I read it. He said we live in a plastic universe. He means a moldable universe. That's the old definition of plastic. A world that changes as our consciousness changes. So if we want to change our experience, we need to think something different than we've been thinking up till now. I mean, how often do we look at a hurdle and decide in the instant that we look at it that we'll never be able to get over it? In that instant, we have chosen our limitation. If we see a spot on an x-ray, or we're given a bad diagnosis, and we decide that our disease is too powerful for us to overcome, then that is now the truth in our life, unless we change it. If we decide that we aren't going to be prosperous until the economy turns around, then that's the way it's going to be until we get a better idea. People all over the world, you see this all the time, are living lives that are far less than they could be because they've accepted the limitations of gender or race or age or whatever it happens to be. What we teach here is a philosophy that life is a power that exists fully and completely in each and every one of us. And life is always seeking to grow by means of us beyond its present level of understanding. And nothing can stand in its way. Absolutely nothing. And we can choose to move forward with it, or we can sit down in the middle of the road and complain because we don't think we're getting anywhere. And if we choose to stay where we are, we sit there limited by any fear that crosses our mind, that power will help us to stay there in the middle of the road in our own fearful world because it supports and respects our belief about ourselves and the world. But the instant, and I mean the instant, that we decide that we are greater than any challenge we face, the moment, and I mean the moment, that we become clear and confident about where we're going in life and what we're creating and how we intend to live, life will help us there too. It'll immediately turn on a dime, no recriminations, nothing, and it will go. And it will do so in ways that are greater than anything that we could ever imagine. Now, this month, I've talked about several important ideas. We talked about honoring our strengths. We talked about keeping things simple. We talked about riding the waves and not getting stuck in the top or the bottom. And I talked about not giving up. But we also talked about a few very practical spiritual principles that make all these things work, because these things all share a few ideas. Now, one of these principles is honest self-reflection. All three words are important. Honest self and reflection. We need to commit ourselves to a regular spiritual practice where we look at our ideas and we look at our beliefs and we honestly recognize what we believe and what we are thinking about most of the time. How many of you could actually write down exactly what you're thinking about 90% of the time? It's a hard thing to do if you don't look inside, all right? When we do this, that way we can see what part we're creating and what's there. Now, another principle is the realization that anything out there starts where? In here, okay? We know we created it because we create everything in our life. We create our relationship with the world. That's not good or bad. It just is. So we don't need to beat ourselves up over it or anything else. We just need to either stop doing something unhealthy that we have been doing or to start doing something healthy that we haven't been doing. Sometimes it's both, but usually it's one or the other, okay? That something that we need to start or stop may be mental, it may be emotional, it may be physical, it may be a habit, but the change that comes about is spiritual. The change is spiritual. And finally, we need to recognize that there is always an answer to any problem we face, and that answer can only be found in here because the problem always starts in here. That's the fastest and easiest way to replace it. And the more balanced and centered and relaxed we are, the easier it is to see it. That's why we need to understand that the physical world around us is nothing more or less than the outpicturing of a never-ending spiritual process that begins with God, shows up as us, and ends up as the world we see. You see, closing, true spirituality is the interplay, the weaving between the invisible and the visible. It's the conduit between what's in our heart and mind and what shows up in our experience. It should be as natural as breathing. It should be as easy as tying your shoes. And if you've been wearing loafers a long time, you may have to practice. But anyway, the sooner we recognize that, the better our life is going to be. When we start to feel very clearly in our heart and mind that everything is spiritual and to live that way, think that way and live that way, it changes everything. It changes everything. It allows us to feel more at ease in the world. It allows us to think more clearly and feel more deeply. It allows us to be more present. It helps us listen to people with compassion and to be a better problem solver wherever we are and whatever we're doing. But most of all, it removes any sense of separation between ourselves and God, between ourselves, the physical, and the spiritual. And once that happens, I promise you, no matter what you're dealing with, the sky is the limit. The sky is the limit. I enjoyed this series. I hope you guys did too, because it is the truth in your life. It really is, and it is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right, let's just take a moment, take a breath or two, relaxed, be present, and know this with me. I know that life is not something I have. Life is what I am. I am the one life, the one mind, existing in the world as me. I am a nexus, a point, a center. I am not all of God, but God is all I am. Spirit, presence, power. And once I begin to acknowledge this, not with arrogance, but with humility, not with greed, but with gratitude. Simply knowing the truth that everything is one. The mind that I have, I share with every person, rich and poor, young and old, here or gone. The one mind is not separated. And I share with every person who ever lived, is living now, or will live, a consciousness that is pure creation. Not just physical creation of the things we see around us, but the creation of invisible things like love and peace and kindness. As I begin to accept this truth, as I begin to see that as my mind goes, my life goes, I begin to pay more attention, I begin to be less afraid, and I start to play with my life. I allow myself to create deeper relationships out of relationships that may already be very good. I allow myself to expand prosperity or to live within the level of prosperity that I have chosen. I allow my physical body to feel stronger and healthier, to sleep better, eat better, and take care of myself. And as I do this, my body reaches its balance. I allow myself to not give in to the stress and the anger and the fears and the cares of the world, because I recognize that many people are also creating those things, and some of them touch my life, but they do not touch me. I surround myself with an atmosphere of safety and security, but especially an atmosphere of love and peace. Nothing that is not loving or not peaceful comes near me. It does not affect me. I give it no power. As I recognize this, I begin to allow myself to create those things I desire. Those things that make my life better, that make the world better, those things that add to the lives of the people around me. As I do this with gratitude, I release this idea into consciousness, taking it completely as the truth in my life. And as I do so, I let it go, knowing that this good and perfect work is already complete for me from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.